Hello there and welcome to week two of the Spread Nessun's Football Picks Podcast. I'm Nessun.com's Mike Cole, joined as always by Ricky Doyle. Ricky, how you doing?
Doing well.
Cool. We're here to make our football picks, sure, as usual. We'll get into the three best games of the week. We'll do locks and upsets, and we're doing things a little different this week. We do have Nessun betting expert analyst Sam Panayotovic joining us, but he will do so at the end of our picks. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you eat your dessert first. We are the main attraction here. Sam is just kind of an appetizer. We'll do things backwards this week.
And we will be sure to let him know that throughout the course of the week.
This is true.
We go bother him at his desk.
Yeah, that's a good point. Don't go bother Sam at his desk. He's working. He's looking at numbers. He's working hard. So week two of the NFL is here. Overreaction week, if trademark the NFL at this point. I mean, Jesus, we get it. It's overreactions. But it is a vital part of handicapping, a vital part of picking games. And there's going to be plenty of overreacting this week because you look at week one, underdogs, 12-4 against the spread.
At what point do we overreact to the overreact?
This is what I'm saying. And I almost asked Sam that, like some, but I just would have gotten so.
I mean, you're really going down a rabbit hole.
Yeah,
at that
where it's like, I wanted to ask him, be like, are you afraid you're underreacting to the overreaction or something? Or overreacting to the overreact? I guess what, yeah.
It's, and with a few of these games that we're going to get into, the three games that we chose this week as our marquee matchups, for lack of a better phrase, it was a little bit of a, I found myself flip-flopping a little bit.
Well, before we get into it, it's a story time with Mike. Hit the 30 ahead real quick if you don't want to discuss this. I just want a quick apology in advance for my performance this week coming up. It might not be sterling. It might not be sharp. It might not even be informative. I spent part of the week, or part of week one of the NFL season, especially early slate, in an urgent care room because I thought, you know, week one of the NFL season is coming up about 12:30 on Sunday afternoon. I'm going to get some chores out of the way, cut up some cardboard, put it out for Monday trash day, right? So I'm going to town with my box cutter. Cutting up cardboard, got a couple more pieces left. I'm literally near the end. The bin is full. I've got a few sheets of cardboard left. Zip! Cut off the top part of my finger.
Yeah, you're bandaged up right now.
Bandaged up for a few days.
This is the perils of doing strictly audio, is that you don't have this visual here of a big white bandage.
I have yet to see it because it was bleeding so much.
Yeah.
I am terrified to take this bandage off and look at it.
Yeah, that's dicey.
So I'm sitting there in the urgent care waiting room. They tell me it's going to be an hour as I walk in at 12:55 on Sunday of week one of the NFL season. I'm like, God damn it. I'm not going to watch any football today. Great Wi-Fi at the Billerica urgent care. I was able to watch some of the games as they were happening. But one of those things, state of mind completely altered for the entire weekend. Just a complete mess. So
now it's your left hand.
It is my left hand. Yeah.
You're righty, correct?
Yeah, I am.
So that's good. That's a plus, I suppose.
It's not. It's really not. There's so it's so hard. Like, yeah, I gotta put a stupid Ziploc bag on to take a shower. My wife is mad. I can't give our son a bath. Washing dishes is difficult. Lifting up our son is difficult.
What you should do is you should really lean into it and go with like the total club, like the big club over the entire hand.
I thought about it. My wife mentioned that. I wanted to go swimming. I can't go swimming with the
You work a couple days off out of that. I don't know.
That is what I thought. I asked the lady at the urgent care, hey, am I going to be able to type with this thing? Because I got to, you know, and she's like, if you want to take Monday off, it wouldn't be the worst idea. But I powered through it.
You did. You did.
So I just, you know. My insight, you're going to have to carry me here. You're going to have to be the bell cow here. We did okay in week one, I suppose. We just continued to kick the can down the 50-50 road. Both of us went 7-9. No real, you know, standouts or anything like that. I don't know if you have any quick reactions to how we did or how things went in week one.
No, I mean, and you started to get into it at the very beginning before I rudely cut you off with nonsense. But the underdogs, 12-4 against the spread. It's the most wins against the spread in week one in the Super Bowl era for underdogs. Nine underdogs, or eight or nine, with outright wins.
I think
so,
it was 8-8.
The books cleaned up. This is a big week for the books.
Yeah.
So So,
and still somehow Sam and I, taking a ton of dogs, still managed to go 2-2-1 in the super contest this week. So
thing was, though, is a lot of I think the biggest upset was the Steelers at 6.5. So I mean, it was underdogs, but it wasn't like, you know, you didn't have these huge spreads.
That is a good point. Yeah, it was very tight this week. So be a little different this week, but those games we will not really touch on. We're gonna try to get the best three games of the week. So let's, without further ado, you know, nobody cares about my finger. Let's get into it. Sunday afternoon, you got the 49ers coming off of a hold on to your butts game all of a sudden in Detroit, going back out on the road, going back to the East. Well, I guess Detroit's Midwest, but going now to the East Coast, take on Philadelphia for a 1 o'clock kick. San Francisco coming in with to face an Eagles team that beat up on the Falcons last week. San Francisco here laying 3.5 points at DraftKings Sportsbook. We use DraftKings for all of our lines. The total's at 49.5. Doesn't seem like weather's going to be an issue. Philly beat San Francisco last year in early October, but this is a completely different 49ers team, and really it's a completely different Eagles team, so I guess that doesn't do as much good. But where are you sitting on this one, where it looks like most of the public is on San Francisco early on?
Yeah, which is somewhat surprising. Like this, that the hook almost scares me a little bit here, because I feel like I'm getting baited into taking the Eagles, and I don't love this spot for San Francisco. You mentioned the scheduling thing, you know, going back east for the second week in a row. I believe they have Green Bay next week for their home opener. Yeah. So it's a little bit of a, this is like that, I don't want to call it an early season trap game, but it is a weird little scheduling hitch that they got to deal with. But for me, I just, see, when it comes to that Eagles offense, I want to see it one more week against good competition before I totally buy into it.
That's fair.
I just look at some of what they did in that game. I mean, they bullied around Atlanta, but it is a classic case of, does that say more about Philadelphia or more about Atlanta? Because I do think that the Falcons, you know, for whatever they do this season, I think they're going to struggle at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and they're going up against an Eagles team that, you know, I don't know what their record's going to be at the end of the day, but I do think their strength is going to reside at the line of scrimmage. So there was a certain, there was a mismatch in the trenches there. The thing with the San Francisco offense is I trust it a little bit more because I've seen it against good competition. Granted, it didn't happen as frequently last season because of all the injuries that piled up. But, you know, a couple of years ago, we saw it against good competition throughout the postseason. So I just have that trust in Kyle Shanahan's ability to sort of, you know, to scheme something up and take advantage of the soft spots in Philadelphia's defense, which I think ultimately this game might be won at the second level. I look at the linebacking cores. I like San Francisco's a lot more than I like Philadelphia's. I think you're going to get a lot of George Kittle in this game. So, I mean, the 3.5, it's one of those numbers that's always gives me pause one way or the other, but I'm going to lay it here on the road, even though, I don't love the spot, but I just want to see it more with Philly before I completely buy into what they're doing offensively.
Understandable. I'm on the other side, though. I'm going to take Philly. I'll take the points. And, you know, sticking with the theme of the week, there's really nothing about what I saw from either of these teams or what either of these teams did last week that really sways my decision, because, I mean, for all intents and purposes, San Francisco absolutely curb stomped the Lions. Like, I don't put a whole lot of stock into that. There's a fluky onside kick late. San Francisco lost 3 fumbles, so that's kind of, you know, bad fumble luck. But I think this says more about how high I am on Philly this year than anything else. And I thought they did a great job of putting Jalen Hurts in position to succeed. And I think we've seen, I mean, it's 1 week, but like what they've done to surround him with pass catchers that fit his skill set. I think, what did they have? I think he had like an average depth of target of like 3.5 yards or something like that.
Yeah, 3.6 yards.
Which
just getting rid of the ball like instantaneously.
It's almost hard to believe. And so that's,
I mean, that's like the Steelers offense of last year. Yeah, just like working around the line of scrimmage, basically.
And to your point about the linebackers is well received. I mean, if they tackle, this is going to be a long game for Philly. I like what the Eagles were able to do last week. Sam kind of mentioned this too. Major coaching staff upgrade for the Eagles. It sure looks like through 1 week. Again, it's far too early to know that, but I like, you know, I just like the situation that the Eagles are finding themselves in right now. You look at San Francisco injuries. You know, I don't put a ton into the Raheem Mostert injury. You know, how many? It feels like every week a 49ers running back suffers a season-ending knee injury.
I was just gonna say, at what point do you like take a look at the medical staff or something?
I don't even
like
think it's the medical staff, because it's like they run. It's just, you know, they run the stretch offense. Maybe there's something to that.
Like, yeah, or just, like look, it's something.
Is there something with like them running?
Like, at what point does it go from being coincidental to something in the, you know, stylistically? I don't know.
So like, is it a read option thing where it's you don't know which way you're going and starting yourself on a slower, you know, not getting that full head of steam? Maybe that affects something.
Because,
this is a
complete carryover from what we saw last season.
The more important injury, though, I think, is in the secondary. Cornerback Jason Verrett tore his ACL. So he's obviously done for the season. They were talking about signing Richard Sherman. I don't think they did that. They brought in somebody else, a veteran. I forget who it was. That's a great job by me. but I think you also look at, I was reading up Niners Nation blog, one of the SB Nation blogs. Over the past two seasons, San Francisco's faced quarterbacks who average more than 20 yards per game 14 times. In those games, QB's averaging 48 yards, 6 yards per carry. Like, it's something that's given them problems. I don't think... Well, I guess Lamar Jackson is better, but there aren't. I mean, he might be the only one who's better at this than Jalen Hurts. And I think getting it out quick and running that offense neutralizes some of San Francisco's ability to get after the passer, perhaps. You look at the pass blocking numbers were very good for Philly last week, and I think a lot of that has to do with the way that the game was called, not necessarily the offensive line. But that's no disrespect to the offensive line, because I have no idea what I'm talking about. That was a theory more than an observation.
Is it safe to say that these two teams are kind of similar in how they operate, like from a strength standpoint? Like, they're both going to rely on the quick passing attack.
Like, the 49ers are a better version of it, but this game's in Philly. You know, the travel 2 weeks in a row. Yeah.
But I think that that's sort of a, when I'm looking at some of these games this week, that's sort of a theme for me. Like, we'll get into the Chargers and Cowboys in a minute, but like, I see some similarities in those two teams as well. So, I think that maybe that's sort of where I'm swayed towards the 49ers, is I almost feel like the Eagles at this point are like a poor man's version of the 49ers. Sure. But, you know, my opinion could be changed this week.
Yeah, it'll be. I look forward to watching that game, because there was some very intriguing quarterback play going on there with, you know, what San Francisco is doing with Garoppolo and Trey Lance, and obviously Jalen Hurts too. So it's a good game. This also is a good game. I would imagine this is America's game of the week. You've got a 4:25 kick in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium, where the Chargers, coming off of an impressive Week 1 win on the road at Washington, head home for their home opener, their first game in front of fans at that new stadium. They take on the Dallas Cowboys, who are, you know, a valiant effort Thursday night in the opener at Tampa Bay. The Chargers, as it stands right now, laying 3 points at home. I'm interested to know, in terms of odds making, how much is factored in for home field advantage there, because I can't imagine it's much, because this is going to be a Cowboys home game.
Yeah, this is a neutral site game. That's sort of how I'm looking at it.
At best, if you're the Chargers.
Yeah.
But, you know, Chargers laying 3 here at quote-unquote home against a Dallas team that certainly looks a lot better with Dak Prescott back under center. Go figure. Who do you like here?
Yeah, the valiant effort. Well, the narrative coming out of that game on Thursday night, I mean, I feel like the Cowboys are getting showered with praise for a team that still lost. I mean,
and at times got picked apart by Tom Brady.
That defense is still very much an issue. I just mentioned, you know, the San Francisco linebacking core, and I don't know if you look at Dallas's, like, the middle of their defense. I don't know if there's like a bigger discrepancy between talent and production of like a single unit in the NFL, because that, in theory, that defense has pieces, particularly in the middle, and we're now going on 2 years where it's just been getting carved up. And so I'm leaning Chargers in this game. And, you know, I do think this is going to turn into a shootout. I mean, that total has just been soaring. I don't know what it's going to close at.
We got it at 55 right now.
55. So you know, that we'll see where that ends up. I probably would just stay away from it altogether. But this, I mean, this does seem like a game that whichever team has the ball last might be who pulls it off. The one thing I will say is that win last week by the Chargers, that's a game they lose last year.
Yeah.
In going back several years. So maybe they've sort of gotten over the hump a little bit thanks to having a legitimate quarterback and perhaps a legitimate head coach. We'll see how that shakes out. The Cowboys, meanwhile, they weren't able to get over that hump last week. So there's sort of that mental block for me that has a little bit more trust right now in Los Angeles. I think LA is going to be able to keep up for the most part offensively. I do think as good as Dallas's offense is, LA's might be a little more multidimensional. So I think you might get a lot of Austin Eckler in this game. And I trust the Chargers defense a little bit more.
Chargers have a better defense too.
So I'm leaning Chargers, but this is another game where I think you're going to learn a lot about these two teams coming out of it.
I hate how much I like the Chargers. I'm going to take the Chargers. Yeah. For a lot of the reasons you mentioned, you look to the injuries or the absences. Michael Gallup's got a calf injury. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. Lyle Collins suspended. So that's a tough break on that offensive line going up against a very good pass rush. The secondary, pretty good. You can't read too much into being able to shut down Heineke last week in a weird spot for Washington, but that defense passed the test in week one for the Chargers. Much tougher this week, but I'm with you. I think, you know, that the Chargers, that is a tough ask in week one of the season to go on the road, take on Washington in a 1 o'clock game that really doesn't have a ton of juice, but you're also going up against a very, very good defense. A team that has high expectations, is well coached, and you know that offensive line was an issue or a question mark for San Diego. There we go.
Yeah.
For LA, the Chargers offensive line allowed a 12% pressure rate, the lowest in the NFL in week one. I mean, that is night and day from what we saw last week, and that's going up against an elite pass rush that featured, you know, Chase Young and his friends. You look at that game last week too, and for as close as it was, I think Chargers won by 4 points in DC. They were much better than that final score indicated. I even saw like people in the betting community joking that they felt the game was fixed because there were so many things that went against the Chargers. You look at that play down near in the red zone where Herbert fumbles it into the back of the end zone on like a Tom Brady Tuck Rule type play. Just weird stuff happening.
I mean, both these teams left points on the field last week.
Yeah, that's a good point. Los Angeles outgained Washington 424 to 259. They ran 29 more plays, had a 12-minute time of possession advantage. They just went 2 of 6 in the red zone.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to have an easier time this week against Dallas. I think they convert those opportunities into points. You look at two, they're going to throw the ball a ton. They threw the ball in first down 63% of the time last week. There were times when, you know, Brady just picked apart that secondary. I thought I had my notes in here for who they targeted, but
Anthony Brown got.
It was Anthony Brown.
It was like nine, absolutely annihilated.
He had to give a passer rating of 152 against him. 9 of 10 for like 140 yards, touchdown. I mean, the Chargers watch film. Like, they're going to see that. Like, if I can pick up on that just by reading a blog and looking at the Pro Football Focus numbers, I'm pretty sure the Chargers have already seen that in film. And they're going to find ways to. And they've got, to your point, the versatility on offense. They have weapons. I think they find a way to expose that and kind of win this thing in a relative shootout.
There's just like that growing pains aspect of it too for the Dallas defense. I mean, like Micah Parsons, like I think he's going to ultimately be an impact player in this league. But there were plays where he was sort of, you know, his head was spinning a little bit. And I think it was a kind of a product of them trying to use him all over the place rather than having, you know, him in one defined role. You know, Randy Gregory might be out this week. He's on the COVID list. Just more question marks for me when it comes to Dallas than LA. I think you hit the nail on the head with the offensive line thing. Like, if the Chargers' offensive line can take a step forward this season, I mean, that's sort of the difference maker for them.
I mean, how many times did Brady get touched on Thursday night, too?
Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, he's elite when it comes to evading the pass rush, but
you could see a very similar performance from the Chargers this week.
I don't love Dallas's ability to get after the quarterback.
No.
So.
No, and then on the flip side, I mean, Dallas's offensive line, they at full health, and you know, when they're operating at full capacity, it should theoretically be one of the best in the league, but there's just been no consistency with regards to guys being in the lineup. I think they've had 10 different offensive line combinations in their last like 18 games or something.
That is not going to do it.
And yeah, so it's like you have an immense amount of talent in that area, but you just, if you can't keep the guys on the field for one reason or another, whether it be injuries or suspension or COVID or whatever, I mean, you're just not going to establish that continuity, and that running game has lacked because of it.
Definitely. Yeah, they couldn't do anything on the ground Thursday night.
And kicking game might really be a factor.
Yeah.
Greg Zuerlein looked like he shouldn't have been out there.
Like the Cowboys have one of like the only special teams units worse than the reputation of the Chargers at this point.
Yeah.
So, which, again, Mike McCarthy, there you go. Step on up. Defense and special teams. Doofus. All right. Sunday Night Football. Big one. Got the Kansas City Chiefs at the Baltimore Ravens. What was it? Two matchups ago these two teams played, and it was a barn burner. Maybe I'm thinking of the Chiefs-Rams game. But these two teams played last year. Yeah, last year,
did, yeah.
Week three, we had a 34-20 Kansas City win over Baltimore. Patrick Mahomes 3-0 in his career against the Ravens. As such,
Baltimore favorite in that game, I believe, too.
I think you're correct. As such, Kansas City 3-point favorites on the road Sunday night at Baltimore. Baltimore coming off a tough Monday night overtime loss. Kansas City holds on or comes back and claws back to beat Cleveland. Who do you like here?
So I don't know about you, but when I was watching the Monday night game, watching the Ravens was confirming all of my suspicions that I have about them this season. Why when we did our preview episode, I just wasn't really high on them in the AFC North. And that was before the Marcus Peters injury, before they lost Gus Edwards on the offensive side. I don't know if that secondary is going to be the same when they don't have, you know, the pass rush. You mentioned lost a lot of production in terms of pass rush with Matt Judon and Yannick Ngakoue. If they're not able to create that pressure, it's going to obviously, you know, put more pressure on the secondary to step up. And I mentioned the Peters absence. So I think that the Chiefs are going to be able to stretch the field. And then if you do bring the extra bodies, I mean, we've seen time and time again, Patrick Mahomes has crushed teams that bring the blitz. You're going to give me a high blitz rate and a high rate of man coverage, I think Tyreek Hill is just going to kind of just take the top off that defense. Patrick Mahomes, 8-12 for 210 yards with a TD on passes thrown 10 or more yards downfield in week one. You look at what Darren Waller just did to the Ravens defense. Got to think Travis Kelce's licking his chops a little bit. And then on the offensive side, it's still a little bit of the same from Lamar Jackson. He coughed it up a couple of times, pressured on 17 of his 39 dropbacks. That offensive line looked abysmal against the Raiders pass rush that didn't do a whole lot last year. I don't know. I came away with a bad taste in my mouth from the Ravens' performance on Monday night. But like I said, it was kind of confirming some suspicions that I had. So heading into this game with the Chiefs as a short favorite, I'll lay the points, totally acknowledging that Kansas City has been brutal against the spread going back to last year. I want to say it's like 1-10 against the spread in the last 11 or something to that effect. But a lot of those spreads were inflated. This one's well within reason, even on the road. So I'll take the Chiefs.
I think almost everyone is on Kansas City early here. For that reason, if I was betting this, I would wait until Sunday. Because
see what that number gets up to.
I imagine the number's going to get better. I'll take for the intent of this exercise, I will take Baltimore though here. I was reading something in The Athletic I thought was pretty good, kind of like 15 takeaways from week one. They talked about in the Cleveland-Kansas City game, with the job that Kevin Stefanski did in terms of being aggressive. They went for on 4th-and-3 from like the Kansas City 15-yard line. They got it. They scored a touchdown. Then went for 2 after scoring the touchdown when there was a penalty on the initial try. I think they went for it on like 4th-and-goal from the 5, scored a touchdown. Very aggressive. Last year, Stefanski was number 4 on Football Outsiders aggressiveness index. You look at that number, that list, John Harbaugh, number 5. I think, you know, they are among the better analytical teams in the NFL. I think they're not going to be afraid of Kansas City despite the recent results. So I think when they're put in positions where they can kind of take advantage of the numbers, I think they're going to do it. I think that's the way that you have to play in order to even have a chance against Kansas City. They have a, you know, the rest disadvantage is a bit of an issue, but I mean, credit to John Harbaugh, 29-20 in his career without the, with rest disadvantage, 25-22-2 against the spread in those games. I'm still not completely sold. I mean, this, we'll be talking about this 5 years from now, probably, God willing, we're still doing this. Jesus. Still some problems.
Your finger should be healed by then.
God willing. Defensively, Kansas City still not sold on it, especially against the run. Cleveland averaged 6 yards per carry. They, you know, Kansas City's defense, I know it's only 1 week. I know stats are whatever after 1 week. Kansas City 27th in defensive EPA overall, 31st against the run. So they struggled against Cleveland. I think this Baltimore team is built similarly to Cleveland. I think they have a chance to kind of, again, you look at it like, I'm surprised it hasn't worked yet because they run the ball well and they're not afraid to take chances. The fact that they haven't beat Kansas City yet trying that kind of flummoxes me, and maybe they're due here.
Yeah, it's trying to figure out the sort of the secret sauce for beating Kansas City is always kind of interesting because they have had so many issues against the run for, what, 2-3 years now?
Yeah. I mean, but if that...
So you look at a team like Cleveland or Baltimore at their peak, like, in theory, that's a team that should be able to capitalize on that, make life difficult. But then there's like the flip side of it where I almost feel like you need the quarterback play. Yeah. And I guess that's what, you know, when it comes to those two teams that I struggle with a little bit. Like, I just, there's still something about, I mean, obviously we saw it with Baker Mayfield throwing the late interception last week. Like, I could just totally see a situation where you get a similar result this week where Lamar Jackson just turns the ball over a couple times, or if that offensive line doesn't hold up, you know, you see somebody on the Chiefs make, like, the Chiefs are very much a bend don't break unit. Like, I could see you getting a couple names back with Frank Clark, the Honey Badger. Like, maybe somebody steps up, makes a play late in the game that sort of changes momentum in that favor. But yeah, I don't know, it's just trying to figure out that recipe for beating Kansas City.
Well, like, you look at the, what is it, 2018 or whatever, the Patriots go in to Arrowhead in the
maybe
AFC
it's just having Tom Brady.
And like, they ran down their throats. They had, you know, they ran the ball at will basically, and still had to go to overtime. And Brady had to play his ass off with maybe the greatest non 2002 Super Bowl drive of his career. Like, you know, that does speak to your point in terms of the quarterback play. But then they lose fluky games sometimes too. I mean, nobody's perfect, but yeah, it is a. I mean, you got to do everything well. I mean, and that's not really groundbreaking analysis when it comes to one of the best teams in the last 20 years.
I think my pick this week is centered more around skepticism regarding the Ravens than it is total comfort in the Chiefs. Yeah, because I do. I do think the Chiefs are. I think you're going to see some regression throughout the course of the season from them too. Like, I don't think they're better than they are last year. I mean, maybe they're about the same, but I mean, I don't. That offensive line should be better, but you know, that's sort of, if that's offset by the defense taking a step back. Like, I don't know. I just feel like they're kind of in the same place as they were last year. Whereas the Ravens, I think, have the potential to take a significant step back if they don't get those splash plays on defense, which I think are going to be, if they do start to get them, it's going to be. A lot of it's going to be contingent upon the coaching, because I don't think they have the personnel that they had last year.
Yeah, fair. Who's your lock?
Lock? I know Sam will probably have an issue with my lock, but I'm going to take the Patriots. 5.5-point favorites over the Jets.
The rookie quarterback thing is legit.
No, it is. It's, well, against on good, both sides of it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
a
fair point, right.
You know, I don't feel great about laying that many points with a rookie quarterback making his first road start. But I also know the track record that exists on the other side of Bill Belichick going up against rookie quarterbacks. And I just think that Jets team, especially with Mekhi Becton sideline, I think that offense is going to struggle. Like, I think there's going to be...
The offensive line was bad, even
bad
with
the crap kicked out of it by Carolina. And I don't think that's a 1 week thing. Like, I think that's going to be an issue that sets them back for a good chunk of the season. So, you know, if I'm looking at, do I trust the Patriots to be able to, you know, put up you know, 24 points or something while holding the Jets to, let's call it 10. Like, I just think this New England defense is going to be able to cause a lot of problems for Zach Wilson and that offense. So I'd be comfortable laying up to about a touchdown with this game.
Yeah. I mean, but my pick probably is going to be the Jets or the Patriots as well, just because I think this feels like a seeing ghost part two type of deal for Zach Wilson.
I mean, it's about as close to a must win week two game as you can get too, right? Yeah. If you're the Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're staring at New Orleans and Tampa Bay coming up next, I mean, this is a game you gotta have it. Gotta have it.
For my lock, I'm going to take Pittsburgh, 5.5-point favorites at home against Vegas. I know I just got done talking about how I'm not concerned about Baltimore having a rest disadvantage. I'm not as confident about the Raiders going out east now to take on a very good defense, coming off an overtime, emotional home game win. Like,
what a wild game that was.
I know. It just feels like a complete letdown spot for the Raiders. There were also times on Monday night where, like, well, I don't know what Derek Carr is doing. Like, the throws are not great. It just not, they didn't look completely in sync.
It's uncomfortable. Something is off and uncomfortable with the Raiders that, like, I can't really put my finger on.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that Gruden is sold on Derek Carr, and it's just, like, it's just kind of reflected in, like, the mannerisms and stuff.
Yeah, they're just unpredictable, too. I just think, you know, Pittsburgh took forever to get going offensively last week, but that's a tough matchup on the road at Buffalo. I think a much easier assignment this week at home against a Raiders defense, which isn't as good as Buffalo's. Pittsburgh's defense is elite. I wonder where the points come from for the Raiders here. So I'll take the Steelers in this spot. Who do you got for an upset?
Upset. I'm going to take the Vikings. Right now, 4.5-point underdogs against the Cardinals, plus 190 on the money line. This to me just screams classic Cardinals. I mean, this is what we saw last year. Like, no team for me has a bigger gap between their ceiling and their floor. Like, there are some weeks they look incredible. Other weeks, you just wonder how they're going to keep up with the other teams in the NFC West. And this line jumped. It swung from a 3-point spread on the look ahead to now 4.5. Look, you're not going to get another 5 sacks and 7 pressures from Chandler Jones. You're not going to get, you might get a decent performance from Kyler Murray, but I mean, he, according to Pro Football Focus, made more big time throws than any QB in week one. So you got to think there's going to be a little bit of regression there. And I thought that result against Tennessee spoke more about the Titans, or as much about the Titans as it did about Arizona. I mean, their offensive game plan was brutal. I don't know. I'm still buying into the Vikings a little bit this year. I think they're going to be decent. And meanwhile, with Arizona, I got issues with their secondary, so I think they probably get exposed a little bit this week.
Yeah, I feel like Arizona's going to be a team that I have no idea on all year. Minnesota,
yeah,
too.
They're just...
God bless you.
Arizona's they're a fun team. Like, I enjoy watching them.
Yeah.
Week to week, because there is that element of uncertainty. But
coaching,
I just...
be a slight issue for them.
Yeah, I can't see... That NFC West is already looking
for
as
week
advertised.
One, yep, exactly. Yep. For my lock, I'll take Cincinnati on the road at Chicago. Getting 2.5 points. Don't love that I'm only getting 2.5 here, but I think this is a game the Bengals have a chance to win outright, especially if Andy Dalton plays the entire game or most of the game. My fear is that Cincinnati is able to jump out to an early lead and Fields comes in and just finds a way to get them back in that game. But you look at Chicago, and I know the Bengals aren't the Rams, and I know, you know, that's not McVay calling the plays over there, but Chicago's defense gave up some big, big plays on Sunday night against the Rams. And Cincinnati's got some playmakers there. You know, it all starts with Burrow, but like Mixon was Pro Football Focus's highest rated player week one. You look at Ja'Marr Chase, you know, the drop things doesn't seem to be an issue anymore. I think they can get guys the ball in space and put up some number or put up some points here. I think this is a potentially tough matchup for Chicago.
Bengals Cardinals would be a fun game.
Yes. You know, like my only problem is aesthetically, I wouldn't like the looks of that. That is
no, that's
a lot
not
of hot
a...
colors there. That I don't, it would bother me the entire game. Same thing with like, I don't love this this Vikings Cardinals game this week. It just feels like a weird bag of Skittles. I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is true.
It rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I'll probably steer clear of it, but.
Especially in Arizona State.
I like the
too,
pick, but I don't want to watch. I'll look at the final score.
Smart. Yeah, so that's it for our picks this week. Now, don't run away yet. Please stay on and join us for our conversation with Sam Panayotovic as we go over week two, over reaction week, and get a look inside the brilliant and tortured mind of Sammy P. Now we welcome in Nesson betting expert, analyst, guru, jack of all trades, Sam Panayotovic. He is joining us remotely this week. So there's a 50% chance. That's actually unfair to our guy, Matt. There's a 20% chance nobody hears this, but including us. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Why 20%?
I don't know. Tech. Things break. I don't know.
So far, so good, I think.
Yeah, the fact that we can hear Sam already.
That line's already changing.
Yeah, right. That's true. That's a good point. Yeah, hopefully.
So if anybody wants to get in the live action.
Get that number early. Yeah, now all of a sudden we are plus 5,000 to have any sort of issues, which might actually be poor line making on my part. Sam, how did you do in week one?
Well, our Super Contest picks went 2-2-1. You know, we picked the 5 against the spread. And honestly, I thought we were 2 plays away from being 4-0-1. But that's the NFL, man.
Aren't we always?
Yeah. It honestly, it's the one sport where you could not watch 3 quarters and be like totally up to speed if you turned it on with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Minnesota, I thought they were going to win by a touchdown. And then Dalvin Cook, his butt is on the turf and they rip the ball out of his hands. They end up giving the ball to Cincinnati because there wasn't enough, you know, evidence or whatever to overturn it. And then Burrow takes him down the field and they kick a field goal. And it's, you know, these NFL games, in all honesty, they swing on one or two plays, and then we get the push on the Jets. Jets are catching 5. They score a touchdown late to go down 5. They go for 2. They don't get it. So we were literally 2 plays away from winning 4 out of 5, Mike.
Well, when you put it that way. I mean,
there's nothing worse, though, than feeling like you got a good read on the game. Your pick is looking good.
We probably, but like at the same like time that. Though, Sam, we probably didn't deserve that Jets cover.
You could make that case as well. I wasn't going to go there.
I don't think they did much all game. But yeah, but I mean, again, I guess it goes both ways, right? That's the NFL. Like it's.
Yeah, the one game that I thought was good that we put in was Pittsburgh, which we talked about on this show last week. Yep. I thought that number was just ridiculous. You know, watching that game back, I was a little bit nervous in the first, second quarter with the way Ben couldn't move and they couldn't run the ball. But you can't really give a defense that much wiggle room. And it turned out that Pittsburgh's defense and their special teams, that was the difference. So I felt good about that one. But as you know, now we're on to Cincinnati, as Belichick says. We're on to week 2, and holy crap, the Denver Broncos are a 6-point favorite on the road. Like, this is what happens after week 1.
Well, you said last week that week 2 is your favorite week, that you typically are more active in week 2 than you are in week 1. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, bets-wise, I only made a couple. You know, we had to make 5 contest picks, but I didn't really like a lot. I think this is a perfect situation where people overreact to what they've seen in 60 minutes of football. You know, the fact that the Cleveland Browns are a 12.5-point favorite against the Houston Texans. It seems high. Tampa Bay last week was laying 10.5 on the look ahead to Atlanta. That number's 13 now. That's a lot of points to lay in the NFL. You know, could Tampa win 28-3? Of course, but man, that's a big number. And then, you know, honestly, one of the biggest movers in the entire market is New England. There's a 6 right now at Westgate. Look ahead number there on New England Jets. That was Pats -3, -3.5. You're seeing 5.5s and 6s now. And I'll tell you what, the public ain't going to bet the Jets either. Like, the books are going to need the Jets so bad. And I know, Mike, we did it last week. I'm not laying 6 points with a rookie quarterback on the road in his first road start. That's not happening either.
No, but I'm also hesitant even taking the points with a banged up offensive line against a good defense and a coach that has a storied history against rookie quarterbacks, but that's neither here nor there. I think this is, as we build this up, my point of view is usually going to come from the football side because I'm a big dummy. Is there anything that you look at that happens in week one that you consider actionable information, or is it still way too early?
I think it's still too small of a sample size, but I do look at a team like Philadelphia, and you look at the pace they played with and the way they utilize their speed. We had Ed Sammons on Chicken Dinner back in August, and he was talking about they just need a quarterback and a play caller. They have the speed. They have the weapons. They had an idiot for a coordinator and a coach, and Carson Wentz held on to the football until the cows came home. Jalen Hurts got the ball out. He got it out quick, and they moved. They played with tempo. They played with pace, and you're already seeing those totals there on the Philly game. This total look ahead was like 46.5. San Francisco Philly total's up to 50 now, and I still think that number is too low because those two teams both have really good groups of playmakers that make a man miss and they're gone. Like that San Francisco Philly game, man, that could be in the 30s easily. And I think when a lot of respected guys I talk to all the time, they play more totals than sides. They think the side markets in the NFL are the toughest to beat in all of betting. I don't know if that's the case. That's a little hyperbolic, but a lot of guys do this for a living. They play totals and they look at the tempo and the pace. Conversely, New England and New York, that totals 44 and they open down to 43. I don't know. Those two teams, that could be 17 to 14 that game. I wouldn't bet over with anybody's money in that game, but I think you pay attention to the pace that the teams play at and the skill and the speed they have. That game's going to be a shootout. Same with Dallas and the Chargers. That total opened 50. Now it's 55. And I still wouldn't go under. So that's something to pay attention to, the style and the pace the teams play with. That stuff usually doesn't change week over week.
There's still nothing to me more uncomfortable in sports betting than taking the under in an NFL game. It's just, I understand it. I know the numbers better. It's just with the way the games get officiated and all that, it just feels so uncomfortable. So that's my contribution to the discussion. A quick follow-up. When do you really start paying attention to numbers, trends, et cetera, from on-field stuff within this season?
It's a good question. I mean, like the week-to-week numbers I looked at, I looked at the lines for week two. They come out Sunday night. So while everybody's watching Sunday Night Football, I'm watching this board move. It's really a never-ending process. Like I look at these lines every single day for 3 hours a day, if not more. As for like the stats and stuff, like I think it's important to track the right stats. Time of possession to me is important. I'll always be aware of how a team holds the football, protects the football, runs the football. Yards per play is another stat that I like a lot. How many yards did this team get per play? That's a pretty true and trite metric. I like that a lot. But I mean, the numbers never sleep over here. You see me at work. I just sit in that damn cave and stare at screens all day.
That's what you're doing over there, huh?
Yeah, seriously. And the best at work is when somebody walks up and I love who we work with, but like, I'm clearly like doing something. And somebody walks up to my booth and goes, "Did you watch any football this weekend?" I'm like, "Get out. Leave me alone." I watched football.
So big league. I mean, if you have a problem with me, you can just take it. Ricky, do you have anything else?
It's not you, Mark.
Yeah, I know, Sam. It's a joke. Do you have anything, Rick?
Yeah, that's it for me.
All right. Sam, let's make good picks this week.
I will be on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I already know you hate it.
What else did you tell me? This is a waste of my time our time as I look it up. You had Jacksonville, Dallas and Buffalo. I was telling Ricky before he came in here. He texted me that last night, and I was like, I really like Los Angeles this week. So we're off to a great start in terms of that game. So, I defer to you though. You're an expert. It's in your job title.
We'll figure it out. Well, we always do.
That's right. Sam, thanks for hopping on and joining us.
See you, boys.
That's Nesson betting expert analyst, Sam Paniatovich. There he goes. That's from the spread. Thank you, and see you again next week. Goodbye.